This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus!
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores! It's 3-0 United States!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am Beam.
Plenty to discuss today. We will get into some black and gold discussion. They just played in a final. It didn't go the way we wanted, so we'll get into all that. Also look ahead to where they are in relation to the rest of the league when it comes to playoff position, all that good stuff. Also, a legend retires from world soccer. We'll get into that. And an all-time classic happened in the Premier League this weekend, past weekend. Plus, some bad news for one of the teams participating in that game.
So, shucks.
Darn. Too bad for that team. Anyway, we'll get into all that. Beamer, how's your week been?
Yeah, it's been all right, man. It's been all right. A lot of football going on here. A lot of soccer. Feel like it's wash, rinse, repeat, like week to week. But it's good. It's good. I mean, obviously, this time of the year for you and me, it is very busy. So it's been fun. Willie's been good. Climbing on things now.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a big stage. So we're just trying to protect himself from himself as much as we can. But I guess there's a new line of thinking out there that you should have some risky play. It's like,
yeah, I know.
Risky play.
I know of that. Yeah. Well, like I remember reading things about that said when you have small children, like it's not bad to like try to, I don't want to say like wrestle's the wrong word, but like roughhouse with them a little bit to get that, like, so they learn how to fall. Not that you like walk up and hit them with a baseball bat or anything like that, but it's like you're like, if they're in the,
you don't want to sometimes.
Well, no kidding. But like if they come up to you and are like, yeah, let's, you know, they want to like hit you, or, you know, you can shove them back a little bit on carpeted floor, let them fall.
We do that on the bed before
or on
bedtime.
The bed. Yeah, yeah. Like stuff where they're not going to get hurt, but they learn how to like fall. They're not like as afraid. They get more balance, coordination kind of out of that. I'm sure it's the same thing like when you go to play a sport, right? After some period of time, you're like, oh, this dude's about to come slide tackle me. I know how that feels. I know how to kind of take that and not like, I don't plant my foot directly in the ground right as that guy's about to hit me.
Yeah.
You develop that little instinct to like lift your leg up and not hopefully get your ACL ripped apart.
Yeah.
Like things like that are just, I'm sure if you're a kid who plays on a playground all the time versus a kid who has no access to a playground, you're probably a little bit stronger and, you know, dexterous, all that stuff. It's the same type of thing.
So we have a...
This, by the way, is called Biology and Movement with Bone, an Idiot Who Knows Nothing. Just so we're clear, that's the college course you're listening
to. So in his room, we have a chair, and then we also have an ottoman. The ottoman rocks. Like, so the ottoman, like, moves with the rocking chair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, so... Again, he's been climbing on things, which is great. Like, it's exciting stuff because he can get up on the couch. And
oh, yeah.
He likes to get into Theo's dog toys now because we've kept them up there. So he can't get in them, but now he can get them. So he thinks it's, like, the most fun thing in the world.
Sure.
And so the other day, I'm sitting in this chair, and I'm looking down on him. He's, like, trying to get on this ottoman. And, again, the ottoman rocks. And so I'm like, all right, I'm here. So, like, let's just see what happens. So gets up on the ottoman, like, gets onto his knees, and then, like, manages to get himself standing on the onto the rocking ottoman.
Oh, wow. That's a spot right there.
He tried to take a step, realized that it's moving, and he was like in a full squat, just like moving
yes,
back.
Yes, they do the balance thing they do where they're just wobbling,
like,
and get their hands
back
out.
And forth.
Yes.
And I'm like there with my arms around the whole thing. Like, I know you're going to fall.
Yeah,
whichever way you fall, I'm going to catch you.
Yes.
And so he falls like far side. I like leap. Get him down to the ground.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he looks at me, he's more? And I'm like, No, we're not doing that again.
No,
he fell
that's
down
not...
the steps the other day, busted his face.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That was fun. Yeah, it was the third step. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't like a crazy fall.
I know what you mean.
And then
yeah.
immediately afterwards, like after he cried for about 90 seconds, he like went immediately back,
right
to,
back
the steps.
To the steps. I'm he's like, let's do it again.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is the expiration
time. I hope
you
keep that fearlessness.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
terrific.
That is good. Our first was like timid and didn't want to do any of that. Our second, Ava, our middle daughter, she was the one who was like, top of the couch, leaping onto my elbow, let's try it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know if that's the best idea,
kiddo. Big 100-pound dog, let's pull its tail.
Right.
You shouldn't do that
one. That's right. All right, so let's get into some of the soccer discussion. We could start with the most recent thing that happened to the crew and then work our way backwards, I guess. Because obviously I know probably a lot of people listening, myself included, were watching that Club America, what is it called? Campeones Cup. I almost said CONCACAF. So many cups we're playing for. It's hard to keep them all straight. But yet again, a final against a team from Liga MX, and you lose. Now, we know how Champions Cup, CONCACAF Champions Cup, we know there was illness involved there. This was not that situation.
It was on the road.
Yeah, you're at home here playing again a talented team from Mexico. I think it's important to contextualize just the differences between these two leagues because not every team in Liga MX has this type of salary, but the club you're playing last night, Club America.
It's a giant.
Yeah, I saw like some of the local news people were like, wow, there's a lot of Club America fans. It's like, yeah.
They're one of the biggest teams on the continent.
This would be like, yeah. I mean, it is it's the continental version of playing Manchester United in the sense of they have the history, the fans. If they play a game in Japan, they will have 20,000 people there that are like, yeah, we're Club America fans.
Yeah.
They are a worldwide club. Now, obviously, in this part of the world, they're much more known than they are in maybe some other corners of the world. But, yeah, make no mistake, you put them in any part of the lower 48, you will have at least half the place will be filled with their fans, if not more. So it's not a shock to me that that's how that went. And I can also understand crew fans, you know, it's a fatigue. It's a midweek game, you know. Not every crew fan can go out and just plunk down money for every single ticket, even if you're a season ticket holder. Some of these you just can't make. But yeah, it's a cup final. Like, you know, I thought the attendance was good. The atmosphere seemed great.
It seemed awesome.
From watching on TV, I did not go. I wish I could have. But seemed like a great time for people that were there. They seemed like they were having awesome experience in that regard. But the game itself, Beam, you know how it went.
I think the crew had their opportunities.
Absolutely.
Crew had their opportunities. They had a big counterattack. Patrick Schulte made some nice saves, too. Club America's goalkeeper made some nice saves.
Yeah.
Big counterattack.
Yeah.
Wide open.
And I was in the moment, I'm like, that dude is offside. And then I realized I didn't see until the replay, oh, he's behind midfield, which, of course, then doesn't apply. But in real time, I thought he was just standing on the...
I saw you tweeting offsides, and I'm like, eh.
No, but then I see the replay, and then I had some guy got at me on Twitter, too, and was like, for someone who supposedly watched the game for 30 years, you really don't know the rules very well. And it's like, one, it's not supposedly. I can introduce you to people I've been to games with for 30 years. That's one thing. But number two, how about maybe sometimes watching it in real time, you fire off a tweet, you're wrong. Like, and then I retweeted and said, on further review, looks like that's not the case. Okay, fine. Get it wrong sometimes.
Never tweet.
I didn't delete it, though. I'm leaving it up.
Yeah, why would you delete it?
Because I want to fight.
I said Dan Jones was terrible on Sunday afternoon. Went 17 for 19 with like 280 yards and two touchdowns.
He is terrible. It's just, it wasn't that the Browns were less terrible than him. They were more terrible. Neighbor Eric, I'm already sorry.
Yes.
We brought up names and teams you don't know. So anyway, yeah, I think for this, the context that needs to be brought up here, I was going to bring up before I got sidetracked, is that Club America contracts that they have on the books, their transfer market value, according to the website Transfer Market, which can be up and down, they put the value of those contracts at over 100 million euros, which is how they measure things. The crew, by contrast, are about, you know, 20 to 25 million in what is believed that if you transferred out all their players, how much they would get back.
Yeah.
This is the market value of their teams. Does that mean they're a better team? No. Again,
I don't think so.
I think the fact that you played them 1-1 for 90 minutes and came back, and honestly, if that game was played like a real game, not like they do for these, you know, weird competitions that now, like with Leagues Cup, where we can't have actual extra time because, God forbid, we actually play games like that. That's how it should be settled. Instead, we have to go to penalty kicks right after 90 minutes. If they had another 30 minutes to play, I bet the crew win that game in extra time.
Probably.
I don't think they win it. You know, I don't think it wouldn't have gone to penalties, in my opinion. But whatever, we'll never know. But that's just, they look like they were kind of taking over later in that game and finding their path. And it looked like Club America was playing for penalties, which I can't blame them.
I can't blame them either.
They have the talent to do that.
When did Amundsen score that sweet goal? Like the 72nd minute or 73rd?
Yeah.
I mean, you had 20 minutes to get another goal, and they had a couple of good opportunities there.
That thing was wicked.
At the very end. But yeah, I mean, that last 20 minutes, you did feel like it was a straight-on like crew barrage.
Yeah, well, I think they got their goal around the 70-something. I thought they got it for like 20. I think they got it around the 70th or something. Yeah, 68th, 70th minute, something like that. But then,
67th, and then Maltese came in the 77th.
Right. So then we had
15 minutes.
Yeah. But so either way, I mean, this was a performance that I thought, look, man, I mean, you're like, once again, every time these type of matchups happen, the Crew, from a monetary standpoint, they are at a disadvantage from the amount of talent they can sign versus what these bigger clubs can sign. Yet at the top end, I don't think anybody can dispute that Cucho Hernandez is as good as anybody on that field, right?
Like, he's the best on that field.
Sure. Right. So, I mean, I'm not making an excuse like, oh, woe is us. I'm saying that's how good Wilfried Nancy is. That's how good this Crew team is, that they play teams like this and play them to that type of result. And then it goes down in penalty kicks. And I don't know how you feel about penalties.
We'll get to that in a second.
I absolutely hate settling games on penalty kicks.
Even the outcome, like even winning a game on penalty kicks, I hate it.
Yeah.
Losing a game on penalty kicks, you obviously hate it more.
Yeah, I mean, I would have taken the trophy. Don't get me wrong.
I understand the need to do it because traditionally, like if you play the extra 30 minutes on top of the 90, you can't just run around. You can't just have guys keeping on running around for forever until a goal is scored.
I know.
You can't do that. So there does have to be some way to settle it. And it is unjust, I feel like. But I don't know. I don't know a better alternative. So that's the world that we're living in.
I agree. You're right.
Do I feel bad? Do I feel sad that they lost that game last night? Yeah, sure. Am I, like, fully disappointed in this team's effort? No, absolutely not. I mean, you had your chances. You missed some of your opportunities.
Yeah,
that's a good team, too. Like, they were Liga MX champions. They got there. They're one of the best teams on the continent, just up there with you. You didn't have your night penalties. You lost the game.
Yeah. I mean, it's the type of game that if you're a championship-level team, you're going to have this, right, where you're playing other equally great teams. And I thought – the one thing that I thought with the way the game went, Club America is one of those few teams that could do the Crew's game plan, essentially, and play their game. Like, they could say, all right, you want to possess? Well, we're going to possess. Let's see what we can do with it. And then, obviously, that's not how they scored their goal. But I think them kind of not letting the Crew have the ball as much at times made the Crew kind of get out of their normal way that they like to do things. And that speaks to they have a good manager. You saw Wilfried Nancy give him like a big hug after before penalties.
Yeah.
Went over and like shook his hand.
Wilf couldn't even watch penalties.
I'm with him. I honestly thought about just flipping it off and then waking up this morning and seeing what happened. Cause I was like, that does not determine how good this team is. What you know is for 90 minutes, you were as good as Club America, as you should be. Like, you should be better than them, I would like to think. But
I think that mind shift kind of has to change, though. I think for 90 minutes, they were as good as you were.
Fine. Like, That's where I'm at with this team.
Like, I'm kind of done with the comparisons and saying, oh, this team is worth this much and this team's worth that much. And like, they've got this history. Like, no, you've proven it over the last year and change under Wilf and under this current roster. That team came into your building and played as good as you for 90
minutes. You're right. And then that's where you go is expectation wise. All right. Well, if we're not going to give those context clues, we're going to put that aside. Then it starts to become a little bit more like how people treat like Ohio State football.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey man, I don't care that you played really tough against team, you know, some other top five team in a playoff game or a championship game. You didn't win, you know, like that's
we're not quite there yet. Cause it's just such a different game.
I know. But that's where this Crew, that's where like the, to your point, that's where this shift happens where like if Manchester City and Arsenal. Oh, they just played. What do you know?
Yeah.
Like, fans are rightfully so on either side of that. Depending on how each of those types of games go, they're not going to sit there and go like, hey, we hung with City.
No.
Hey, we hung with Arsenal. Like, no. Their expectation is win that game. And so I don't blame Crew fans who are a little more agitated about this one and saying, why did we not capitalize on these chances? I think Malte Amundsen gives you, like, a perfect encapsulation of that game yesterday. Yeah. It's not all on him. I don't want to put that out there like that.
No.
But he did get sucked up into the wash that ended up allowing a counterattack to happen where guys running in free from midfield on your goalkeeper. That was bad. And it wasn't just him. It was, you know.
Oh, everybody.
It was a whole thing. Right. I mean, Rossi, I think, had the turnover that led to that. And then, you know, everybody's just trying to push up. That's what happens, right? Where teams are absorbing pressure on purpose to then counter you like that. That is. Club America was able to adjust their tactics in that moment and do that, and it paid off for him. But then, of course, like we said, he comes back with that brilliant goal, which, I mean, that dude has just some...
In live time when the ball went in, I'm like, man, how are they not covering him on that back post? Like, there's a free runner there. How are you not getting to it? And then they go to the replay, like, straight down the line. I'm like, oh, that's how they're not covering. Like, that's he makes the kind of, like, double move, gets himself into a great position. Ball's going to come in the rebound. And then the finish, too. I mean, even to put that in the net.
He taps it in, like, almost kind of behind his leg. That was crazy.
Yeah, it was a terrific finish. But I was kind of with the broadcasters, like, even though as much as I hated Taylor Twombly, like, hey, 90% of the time he's going left on the penalties. I'm like, I don't need to hear that. Just let
Just like, let me watch it.
Yeah, just let the setting run. I don't need to know, like, the full diagnostics of the last time this guy missed a penalty or made a penalty or whatever. Maybe some people enjoy that. I particularly didn't, just my opinion. But I did think that he made a pretty good point about the crew. And you and I know this, and probably a lot of people listening to the show know this. Like, it can come at any point, at any time, from any player on the field, from the crew.
Right.
Like, just out of nowhere. If you think Malte Amundsen's going to score a goal in the game last night, like, no, you're probably not going into the game thinking that. You wake up this morning, you didn't watch the game, you look at the box score, and be like, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, he can, and he has shown his worth. Obviously, he had the multi-ball that helped them win MLS Cup, right, to Yao Yeboah. So, just a great player who has, like many of these crew players now, he's in a rotation-based type of situation. Some days he's playing, some days he's coming off the bench, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just, it's kind of where they're at right now. They have such an amount of talent that they can do that. I thought it was a little weird with Twellman, just to stay on him for a second, where he, you know, he's questioning some of Wilfried Nancy's substitution decisions. I don't know about you, like, he was ripping him for taking Rossi off the field. I felt like Rossi was just not having his best game.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like it was, oh my God, Diego Rossi is never allowed to be taken off the field. I don't think anybody's like that on this team. Cucho might be the only one you can say
is
that.
I think he's the one. I think he's the guy.
I'll say him and Nagby. Nagby probably 99% of the time is not
if
a guy
you
can take off.
If Cucho got subbed off in a game, let me phrase it this way. So during that MLS Cup final against LAFC, because Darlington came off. Darlington came off the field,
right.
And I immediately, because me and Austin Ward were watching the game, Mayer's right there, and we all look at each other like, yeah, I don't like that.
Right. I didn't either.
More of a problem if Darlington is subbed off rather than Cucho.
Yeah, I get you. I mean,
depending on the setting of the game and like how much, like if it's a.
Well, we've seen all these forwards now.
Yeah, if it's a Luciano Acosta situation where like you can't move.
Yes.
Like you got to come off.
Of course. Yeah. But I'm saying if he's like, that was what yesterday they were saying, like, well, unless he's physically not able to go, why would they take him off? Because they're coming to penalties. And I just thought, one, I mean, it's not like he hasn't missed penalties. He has. But also, I feel like he knows his roster. He knows what he can do. He knows who he can put in there. And he also probably is looking at it like, I don't necessarily think we're going for penalties. I may try to go win this thing
right
now.
Here.
Like, which didn't work out that way, right?
What do you think of the – we'll get to the refs in a second with the penalties.
Yeah.
But the fact that they called a dead ball
corner
at the end of the game on a corner, I'm like, I just
– I don't like it. I mean,
Wilf was pretty heated after that.
Yeah, I don't blame him. I mean, I think it is something that – there's a reason that, like, I've always thought it feels like you're supposed to control the ball. And when you play the ball out for a corner, you didn't control it. You were like holding your breath, keeping it, you know, like you stop something, but it's not, you're not out of danger.
The ball should be exited from the danger.
The ball's not cleared
to end
the
game.
To me, it's the same as if the ball like bounces in front of a keeper and then like the opposing player who's trying to score is right there and the ball falls to his feet. He hasn't scored it. If the ref just blows a whistle there, it's like, well, hang on a second. The danger's not been cleared.
Yeah.
If the other team gets possession of the ball and then boots it 50 yards up the field, blow the whistle.
Game over.
But until that happens, and to me, that's just, you didn't control it. If the crew had headed it out and it was their ball, it was a goal kick, easy.
Yeah.
No problem. But it's still in an attacking, dangerous position, theoretically, right? I mean,
I'm not saying that the crew are going to win 2-1
totally.
With a corner winner.
Yeah, this is, again, one of those things where I think we can criticize the refs without saying, like, oh, my God, the crew got screwed. Now, like, during the game, of course, I was posting my little, like, CONCACAF and Don Garber with Macho Man and Hulk Hogan shaking hands.
Yeah.
You know, they're agreeing to, like, screw the crew. But obviously I know, like, the one I didn't like was the one where Rossi is running. I think that was in the – I'm trying to think if that was second half. I forget. But he's running running into the box. There's three Club America players around him. He plays the ball past them all. And one dude just straight up runs into him with his shoulder into his chest and knocks him down. And it's like, not a foul.
I think that was in the second half.
Yeah. And I'm like, the ball is clearly past him. He got no ball. He didn't touch the ball, and he just ran through a player who was advancing his offensive position inside the penalty area, and the ref's just like, get up. And I don't – I mean, again, like, I know you can shoulder charge guys. Are you – like, there's a limit to that. You're not allowed to just run through a guy if he's, like – if he's running free – and you're the last man back. You can't just like stop what you're doing and take his head off with your shoulder, right? Like you, there's a limit to what you're allowed to shoulder charge a guy. And that's one where I'm like, that to me seemed like an easy penalty that didn't get called. I think they lost their minds over that one too. So I do. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, but again, I'm not watching like a Club America fan. I'm sure they had three or four where they're like, what the hell? How did that not get called? Yep. So I always have to remember that.
What'd you think about the line? No line, not replaying the multi ball, the multi penalty. That's obviously the biggest talking point from this game.
Look, not again, not being a rules expert, clearly, but in my mind, I know what the rule says. I've seen all the posts that say, well, if the player misses the penalty,
if the player hits the post or crossbar,
it's not a shot on goal. It doesn't count in a game. If you hit the post, it does not count as a shot on goal. It is not something where a keeper has to make a save. If the keeper is off the field, that ball doesn't go in. So I understand the logic of that, but here's my gray area where I think refereeing gets complicated, and I think referees can lean on that rule book and not lean on the nuance of it.
I think the rule is dumb.
I do think the rule's dumb, but the rule does say if it hits the crossbar without that goalie influencing where the ball goes, and by his presence and by him being able to get a little bit of a head start, it influences how you shoot the ball. So, no, he didn't tap the ball, touch it to then hit. Like, obviously, if he did that, they probably would have restarted it.
Yeah.
I just think there's room for interpretation to say the guy is off his line. He is clearly trying to gain an advantage, and it caused a player to miss by not much.
Schulte immediately is, like, losing his
mind.
Yes,
of course, because he's standing right next to the guy whose job is to look at that, and that guy's doing nothing about it.
And he had been warned every time. By the way, why is the main ref worried about the ball being put down just like straight down on the penalty area?
He was standing
every
there.
Player.
Like every player puts it like a little off center or wherever they want it. But yet we're not paying attention to their goalkeeper essentially taking that giant step forward off the line every single time. So I think my problem is how did none of the other ones get looked at?
Yeah.
Because clearly he was doing this. I mean, he did it every single time.
Yeah.
So I don't know how the ones he did save didn't get called back, but I don't know. I will say this. I thought the crew penalty taking was not the strongest I've seen. I forget which dude it was for them that stepped up, and he hit that one side netting that went in. It's like second or third guy. The first goal that went in for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Schulte stopped the first one, right?
No.
Stopped the second one. They both stopped the second one, I feel like.
Yes.
Because it was
stopped the second.
Yeah. So I think it was the third guy that came up for Club America. I forget.
Nasty.
Yeah, that's a penalty kick. That's what I want to see. That's how you take
Kisses the post.
I feel like their goalie got a hand to almost every single one of our shots. Like, even the ones that went in, he was right there, and he just couldn't
The DeJuan Jones one especially, too.
It
was a good
penalty
because you did go far side netting.
Yes,
You kept it low. You kept it the corner. I mean, that ball glanced off his hand.
It did, yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, again, it sounds like we're complaining about the refs thing. Oh, my gosh, the crew got jobbed. No, I just don't understand it. And I even had like people texting me. Common Man was texting me last night. Mike was, you know, I don't understand replay. What's the point of replay? I don't get it. And I'm like, replay is there so that if the team that isn't supposed to win starts winning, they can undo what they're doing.
Listen, but, my whole thing on penalties, don't leave it up to penalties.
Yes, 100%. Don't get sucked up into a counterattack, right? You know what they're doing. Everyone in the building knew they were, at that point of the game, they're letting you have some of the ball a little bit more, hoping that you will get too far forward and they're going to counter you. Because they couldn't.
That's what they did.
Yeah. It wasn't working doing it the other way where they were trying to outpossess you. They couldn't break out down the crew. I mean, the crew defense is still phenomenal, right? They just, in those type of situations where you're playing straight up and there's no, like, you know, man-on-man advantage based on numbers, like, they could not crack this defense. I mean, Rudy Camacho is just shutting stuff down. Zawadzki played out of his mind. Barrera is doing great things. Again, like, these guys all play this so well. And the wingbacks play well, too.
Mo Farsi is my guy.
Dude, yes, they
I
all.
Love Mo Farsi.
I mean, the fact that you have this guy, right? I mean, all these dudes are so talented. And Amundsen, despite that that gaffe on the getting too far up there, they all did. They were all too far up. And credit to Club America for capitalizing on that mistake. But
you lost the game. It's not the end of the world. Would you have liked to have the cup in the trophy cabinet? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that now with this, I feel like with this Club World Cup thing, which
is... Oh, they're not getting in.
I know they're not getting in, but it just feels like that's what we're waiting on is like, hey, Campeones Cup, that should count.
Well, they've been the best ML. They've been the best MLS team over a whole year.
It's not going to matter. No, I know. No, they're going to give it to Miami because they'll win Supporters Shield. As we'll get into the discussions on that, but the good news...
What if we win Supporter Shield? Because we can.
We can. Technically. So the Crew beat Orlando 4-3 over the weekend.
Crazy
four
game.
4-3 or 4-2?
4-3 because they get a late penalty.
That's right. That's right.
Mr. Boyko, the ref.
Speaking of refs.
Got boycoed.
That we almost did. But you know what? They overcame that. It's okay. They're a better team. So that was a nice victory. I was a little nervy about it when they got their two goals back very quickly. I was like, I don't like that. And then we got the fourth goal, and I'm like, all right, I think we're good.
Yep.
But where this stands for the Crew with the standings, Inter Miami sits on 64 points with 30 games played.
So they got four left.
Yep. Cincinnati is on 56 points with 30 games played. And the Crew are also on – for the life of me, don't understand why they insist on doing this. The Crew have a game in hand on Cincinnati. So on a points per game basis, the Crew have scored like more. They have one more points per game than Cincinnati. Yet in the standings, they don't have them tied. They don't have Columbus 2 and Cincinnati 3.
What's the goal difference?
The goal difference, I think, is...
Yeah, we're ahead of
them. We have like the best goal difference in the league.
Yeah, they shouldn't be ahead of us.
So but they always do this. I don't know why, because I guess they've played more games. So they're saying they've played, like, I don't know. It doesn't make sense because by any measure, the Crew should be second based on tiebreakers, but whatever. They have them as two with 56 points. The Crew have one fewer game played and the same number of points.
Yeah, they're tied on points.
Yeah. So obviously the Crew have the game in hand. Here's how the math works. If you get your game in hand, Cincinnati, Miami can't do anything about that. You jump Cincinnati. You are now five back in Miami. You then play Miami. Mm-hmm. That's if you, again, you have to beat them. That's if you have any hope of supporter shield, you then have to get that. And then you have to hope in one of their four games, they tie a game they're supposed to lose or win, I mean.
Yeah.
Or lose a game they're supposed to win. Tie or lose a game they're supposed to win.
Charlotte, Toronto, New England for them is the other three.
You have to, you're not getting, I mean, look, I'm just saying supporter shield is a nice idea. Get second. I'll take second. You know what I mean? Like I want to be ahead of Cincinnati. I want in the off chance that it ends up being not Miami that you face to get to like MLS Cup. If we get to that point,
yeah,
I would rather you, if Miami somehow stumbles or Messi gets an injury or whatever, they forget how to play soccer and then some other team gets him in an earlier round, I'd rather have home field advantage against everybody else.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't.
That, and again, higher finish than the West Coast.
Yeah, and then
the Galaxy are on 58 points. So
right, so that's your. I think those are your two main goals. Supporter Shield is a nice idea, but basically, Inter Miami has to lose two out of their next four games.
Yeah,
do you think that's happening?
I think it's a possibility of with them coming here
losing
but,
one.
Yeah, those.
But
other...
they have to find another one to lose, and I'm saying like the Crew can definitely theoretically do all that. I'm just saying I don't know how you're going to jump them if they don't.
Let's revisit it next week when they come to town.
Yeah. That's right. They play what, Wednesday night?
Yeah.
I got some bad news. I'm out of town Thursday. So we're next week's podcast.
I'm out of town on Wednesday.
Well, F. All right. We'll figure out how to, maybe Thursday I'll just call you from the road and say, hey, here are my thoughts.
Where are you going?
We next week are traveling down to Alabama.
Oh, are you going to the Fire Fest?
It's not Fire Fest.
Oh.
That's a different fest entirely. It's Furnace Fest.
Great.
But similar.
You did it last year, though. You loved it, right?
Yes, loved it. It's a bunch of... Yeah, Poison the Well is going to be there.
Bunch of bands you've never heard of.
Silverstein. Either, if you've heard of them, you know. But if you haven't...
Bunch of bands I've never heard of. And you try to get me to listen to.
You've heard of Poison the Well.
No.
You've heard of Under Oath?
I've heard of them.
Okay, Under Oath is going to headline. Coheed and Cambria is going to headline.
That's okay.
Okay,
great.
So there you go. Yeah, see? There's some bands. But yeah, then there's other bands you haven't heard of where they just murder each other as they play their heavy music. I'm excited to see Bane and Drug Church.
Yes, both.
And Coalesce, who haven't played
Batman
in years.
Batman villains.
Yeah, that's right.
Bane is hiding at the Drug Church.
I was born in the drug church.
That's a good, that's a pretty good vein.
It's basically a Paul Harvey, but you just cup your mouth.
Yeah.
You just,
ah, yes, that's the rest of the story.
We'll take a break. When we come back, some European soccer news. We'll get to that next. You're listening to Bone and Beam United.
It defies description. Now back to Bone and Beam United.
You can always tweet the program at Bone and Beam United. Just know that if you do, 90% of the time, it's going to be Beam reading your tweet, because I'm bad about remembering to check that. He does. He checks it off.
I'm trying to stay off social media. Trying to stop posting as much. Trying to stop looking at it as much.
That's a very good
idea.
It's
not good for my mental health.
You know what?
That's why I got off Facebook. I'm like, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
You know what? I stay on Facebook because there's a couple groups to sound like an old. But one of them is that festival I was talking about. They have a Furnace Fest group of like people who've gone or who like that type of music. It's 13,000 people.
Wow.
And so every day there's like posts about like, anybody remember this band? And then, of course, like a million people like, yes, I love them. They're awesome. And it's like, ah, my people. These are people who like the same stuff. But outside of that, I've had to stay off Facebook. I have had to like unfriend, mute, unfollow so many people because I'm just like, you know what? I don't want to argue with you. I don't want to hate you. I don't want to get into fights with you.
I just need to
not know what you think about certain aspects of life right now.
Don't you love politics ads?
Oh, it's the best. Don't forget, we're your politics-free station.
It's so dumb.
We, for what it's worth, people, they management wanted us to do that. They put those out there. They then realized how silly that was, and they took them down.
Yeah.
And they heard you. They heard people saying, like, hey, this sounds weird right next to then, like, eight straight senator ads. Yeah. So, yeah, I get it. I mean, that's...
And Bone is the one deciding the political campaigns that are allowed to air on our station. So if you do have complaints... Tweet him at Degenerate T-Bone.
I will, you know what? Because you are loyal listeners to this show, I will let you in on a little... It's not a secret. This is just stuff most people don't know. You can do one of two things in political season when it comes to advertising. TV stations do this too, radio stations, because we are FCC-licensed stations.
Yep.
The government requires us to do one of two things. Either take no political business or take all of that business.
At a discounted rate.
Yes, if you take the business, there is a flat rate that is charged that, like, we could theoretically, if our ratings are higher or lower or whatever, we could charge different rates based on how we're doing if, you know, a grocery store comes or a gas station wants to advertise.
Whatever.
But if a political candidate comes in, it's the same rate no matter what, and it's usually at a steep discount from what all of our other clients pay. And as you've heard, a lot of that is something that goes on the air.
Or if you've just been watching TV, it's the same with TV stations.
Yep, same thing. Now, if you're saying, well, why would these stations take that discount knowing full well they could just go charge full price to other people? This is like guaranteed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There is, once like the political stuff comes in, they know it's, if you get that business, it's just three straight months of like guaranteed.
Awesome ads.
Well, guaranteed. Yeah, awesome ads. But guaranteed revenue. If you don't do that, then you have to go out and, now you can still do it when you're a station like us where we have a lot of, you know, great shows, we have a lot of good ratings, like people want to advertise on our station. But even then, you know, a new manager comes in of a certain, you know, advertising
cachet,
firm or a certain whatever and just says, we just decided no more radio ads, we're done. And they'll cancel like 3 months worth of ads. That's not going to happen with political stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, if you've ever wondered why they all do it and why you can't escape it, that is why. I will say, and I don't think this is political at all, I think what someone should do is run on the idea, because there are some things that changed in the last 20 years, laws that made it so that giant corporations can spend tens of millions of dollars on like a local Senate race or a local House race or whatever. If some candidate just said, I'm running on the platform that next time there's an election, you will see fewer political ads. Vote for me, I will get that done. They could go and try to change some of those laws. It would affect them and every other political candidate.
Yeah.
They would not get as much money. But that, if you ran on that, you win by like 80 percentage points. Because everybody would be like, I don't care what this guy is for. I don't know what else he believes in. Apparently, he is whatever. He likes to eat fish just right out of a lake and just slurp them down.
Like Gollum in Lord of the Rings.
Yes. But you know what? Other than that, we're voting for him because he said.
He's canceling the political
that's
ads.
That's right. Exactly right.
I don't know about you, but I love it sitting in there because I get to listen to it 3 hours a day.
Yeah, we both do.
I know.
For these shows, if you hate it as a listener, We hate it times 10 because we are listening all the time. It's like going to work. It's just imagine at your office, they pipe in some BS, like, I don't know, Mannheim Steamroller or whatever. Maybe that's not your thing. Well, this, they're pumping in just political ads.
Yeah.
Three straight months.
Here's a behind-the-scenes look at how the sausage is made.
If you ever wondered, and I know why people wonder that, that's why. That's why all that happens. So I'm sorry that it happens. Now let's talk soccer. Good game between Manchester City and Arsenal.
Yeah, really good game. I mean, Arsenal defending like hell. Right before halftime, they get a double yellow card, get a red, so they're down to 10 men at the Etihad.
But they're up 2-1.
They're up 2-1.
And then they have the whole second half to hang on to
it.
So
you're thinking to yourself, like, there's just no way, right?
No.
There's no way that
they're not
going to
do that. And then
they did.
They did. For 90-plus minutes, they held on. And you
thought,
for
97 minutes and 14 seconds, they did it.
97.1 minutes.
They did it.
Yeah, they did.
They did it.
But
John Stones there.
Got it done.
Crusher's dreams.
Oh, just heartbreaking for Arsenal fans. Yeah. I mean, again, if you're a Manchester City fan, what? Great? Like, you're used to just like, oh, yeah, one of our amazing players just rescued everything for us. Yeah. Yay. And again, I mean, still a good result. If you said at the end of the thing, Arsenal's going to go to the Etihad and
get a point. You'd be okay with it.
That's a big help for them if it comes down to their two matchups. If it's as close as it has been in years past, I mean, Arsenal could absolutely still use that result. If you get them at home, then suddenly that could be the difference in the Premier League, right? But
of course it could.
But that goal could have also saved Manchester City's Premier League aspirations.
That goal, the difference right now, I mean, is the difference between Arsenal sitting on 13 points and Manchester City sitting on 12.
Yeah, right. But again, we know they're going to play all these other games where they're going to play the terrible teams, they're going to play the other awesome teams, whatever. You know that those two matching up at home and away, those two games are likely to be.
Those are title deciders.
Yeah, they can be. And in this one, Arsenal stayed level with them at home.
Yeah.
Now, if you can avoid City, do it. If you can get three at home, that's 2-point swing.
Yeah.
That might be all you need. So you have all the other games to worry about, too. Now, let me ask you. Well, first off, I didn't want to steal your thunder. How did you feel about that game? You I know, thought it was one of the greatest games we've had so far this season.
I think so far this season. I mean, it was really good. You obviously have the red card, which was huge. I think Arsenal's resiliency, pretty impressive. I mean, again, 10 men against City for 45 minutes, you're thinking, oh, no. I mean, we have two goals right now. That's a nice little safety net. But, I mean, they're going to put four past us. They're going to put five past us. And they didn't do that. On the other side, like your City, you're going for your record fifth straight Premier League trophy. These are games that you have to get points of. You cannot drop points at home, 3 points at home, to Arsenal, a team that's going to be in direct competition for you for the entire year. So I thought it was fun. I mean, it was chippy at Erling Haaland after the goal was scored by John Stones, just throwing a ball at an Arsenal player. Gabriel coming up to them. I mean, did you see this after the game? They got chippy. Gabriel Jesus is coming up to
Haaland
and said something.
I think that's who he threw the ball at.
It was great.
Haaland threw the ball at his
head. Get the F away from me.
Yeah,
like, pushing
him
after the match. Like, that's what we need.
Yes. Well, and that's what this – I think this is turning into a rivalry because Manchester City needs an actual rival. I mean, no offense to
– there's none taken.
No, I mean, I'm not saying that about Manchester United. I'm saying that's a City rivalry. That's a derby. That's fine. There's always going to be some love lost there. But
you need someone to push them.
They need to feel like they're threatened. And it unfortunately for them, that's not how it has gone for anybody outside of Arsenal lately, where Arsenal's kind of pushed them.
Liverpool there for a few years, then they kind of fell off the pack. Now we'll see what Arne Slot's able to do kind of in their first year. And, I mean, you're looking right now at the table. City are first with 13 points through 5 games. We're still very early, right?
Yes.
I mean, we haven't even cracked double digits. All the returns on Arne Slot have been pretty good outside of that Nottingham Forest loss that they had at Anfield a couple of weeks ago, but they've got 12 points. Your guys, Aston Villa, back. We're crashing the party again. That seems to be pretty good. Yeah, Arsenal in good form, too. I think it's going to be a fun race. And the problem for City now is that Rodri's going to miss some time. He did tear his ACL. So,
yeah.
And I know that Pep loves him, like absolutely loves him.
Here's the thing. I saw Tom Reed actually posted this, which is a great note from him. There's no overstating this loss. Yeah, Haaland is a goal-scoring machine, but Rodri has become City's most indispensable player. They have lost 7 of 21 games in which he hasn't played.
Yeah. With him, they have, like, lost one, I think.
Yeah, like, he's...
At home, I know his record at the Etihad was, like, Yeah, he in 100 games, they had like 99 wins. So yeah. It was something stupid. Yeah.
So a torn ACL means, I mean, you
long time.
You might, because their season is so long, maybe you see him back March, April, theoretically. But, I mean, a torn ACL.
Yeah.
Even, again, if it depends. I'm sure it depends on the severity. And, like, it isn't like he had a compound fracture and all this other stuff. Like, you know, we see you in football sometimes, right? But, like, this is a big loss for them. So the fact that they didn't get three at home and they lose Rodri.
Tough.
Like, knowing now that is that's a wide open door for Arsenal, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think if you're Arsenal or if you're Liverpool or any of these teams that have, I don't want to say illusion of winning the,
Premier League title. Manchester City is, I mean, they've won four in a row.
Yeah.
They're as gettable as they've ever been in the last, since the pandemic essentially started.
But until someone gets up there and knocks them off of what they've been doing.
Yeah.
Like, you have to go through them. And I think you're saying to yourself, if you're a fan of one of these teams that wants to be a contender to try to win everything at the end of the year, like, oh, shucks, you hate to see that happen. Like, I really do. Yeah. I think you're just, that's what you're saying. Like, oh, man, they have to do it without Rodri. Like, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Like, bad as it sounds, like, Rodri is a terrific player. It's like, oh, no, I want to take him on at full strength. Do you?
Dude.
Do you?
No, you don't. Honestly, I mean, we're talking about a guy in Rodri who was the player of the tournament in the Euros where Spain won. Like,
he's a world-class player.
World-class player, and clearly when he's on the field, your team is probably going to win.
Yeah.
That's just how he is. Not having him on the field is a humongous loss. So, now, I don't think anybody other than Manchester City fans is shedding a tear in that regard. Fans of the beautiful game might shed a tear for just losing out on watching a player of his brilliance.
Yeah.
But you know what? If he was wearing any other colors, I think people might feel a little more sympathy. It's just, it's Manchester City. No one wants to see them win a fifth title in a row.
Right.
No one wants to see them go out and be what they've been. So, yes, but seeing someone else win the Premier League this year would be quite a story.
Yeah, seeing Arsenal win the Premier League would be fine. Liverpool, that's a different story.
I understand. I understand how you feel about it.
But even, Rodri, he was the one leading the charge saying that we're going to boycott, you know, like we're going to boycott games because we're playing so much. And then, boom, like the next week. Tears his ACL.
You know what I'm going to say? Inside job.
If you want, yeah, exactly. By their own guys.
Gianni Infantino was like, you know what? Someone get over there and tear his ACL.
Wait till you see this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect him to be back because.
No.
I'm guessing like his mindset's like, if you're willing to boycott games and you just got injured and you tore your ACL, now was that because wear and tear? I don't know.
Yeah. There's no way to say, right?
But
I mean, it, yeah.
You're looking at this from a Rodri perspective saying, well, why would I rush the comeback then?
I wouldn't blame him. Yeah. You know what? I mean, I could see a player. I understand. There are players that say, I got to get back. I can't stand to be off the field.
And Rodri is probably one of those guys.
Yes, but also there are players, and this makes a lot of sense too, who say, hey, it looks like my body's trying to tell me something. You know what? I'm going to take all the time I need to heal from this. If that means it leaks into next offseason before I'm back, like doing actual, like getting into soccer shape stuff, then
It probably will. It's an ACL tear.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's not just about that healing. It's then
9 months from now puts us in June.
Yeah.
The end of June.
It is very possible a guy could come back before that.
Yeah.
Certainly, especially with some of the advancements. And you know he's going to get whatever amount of treatment and rehab that you can. He's going to get all of it. It's going to be monitored. It's going to be great. But it's just one of those things where even if he does come back and pushes it and is good to go by, let's say, late April, is that enough to help you down the stretch? I mean, it could already, I don't want to say it could be decided, but I don't know what the schedule is. I don't know when Arsenal and Man City play again, but like if he's not out there for that game, that could be the type of difference. Yeah. Now, if any team's got a replacement for him, it's Manchester City because them and Real Madrid, right? I mean, there's the type of teams that can withstand losing world-class players and then look down their bench and go, oh, look, here's another world-class player. He's just younger.
February 1st is their next game.
Yeah, he's not playing in that game.
No.
So, I mean, again, that'll be a massive tilt. We'll see how the rest of this goes. Obviously, a lot of soccer between now and then. But, you know, you presume if Arsenal and Manchester City play the way they are capable of and they keep this race close until February 1st, that game could be a huge decider.
Yeah.
And then it depends on tons of – again, Arsenal has to stay healthy too.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know.
See with Odegaard what goes
on. Yeah, this is – yeah, right, exactly. They have their injuries to deal with too. So this is a big loss there. And I saw this ex-Real Madrid guy, your guy from Manchester United – Rafael Varane has called it a career.
That makes me feel so old.
Yeah.
I remember when Rafael Varane burst onto the scene. He was they're a teenager or in his young 20s. And I just remember Cristiano Ronaldo being like, I've never seen a guy like that before. He's built, literally, as the kids say, he's built diff. I mean, he comes on, came on like a wrecking ball. He's strong, he's powerful, he's big. And so, like, he was the next guy in line and forever. I mean, he's playing next to Sergio Ramos there and, like, had so many good years at Real Madrid. And then since then, I mean, if you watched any of the United games, like, he was gone. It was good his first year. And then second year came, third year went, like, goes to Como on a free transfer and then blows picked out up, his ACL yeah, in the debut injury. And then, like, done.
Yeah.
Like, that makes me feel so old.
His resume is, you know, hard to top. And this is what happens when you play for teams like Real Madrid, but obviously you have to be good enough to get the call. 360 games for Real Madrid, won 3 La Liga titles in 2012, 2017, 2020, 4 Champions League titles, which, think of that, one more Champions League titles than La Liga titles. That just is a mind-boggling thing to comprehend.
World Cup.
But yeah, yep. Also Copa del Rey in there. Also won the Club World Cup multiple years with them. So, yeah, this is a resume that is hard to top, but you're right. He's one of those players now, and I have gone through this a lot, being a little older than you.
So I'm going through this for, like, the first time. I'm going through this for the...
Where it's like, oh, I remember when this plucky young kid came up, and we were all like, oh, man, this kid could be good.
So I went through it.
And now you're like, oh, my God, he's retiring? I remember when he was a little baby.
He's younger than me.
Yeah, see?
He's 31. I'm 32.
Like,
this is bad. It's a bad situation. So I remember it, too, like, getting into my 20s. Like, Wayne Rooney, perfect example. Everybody knows, if you listen to the show, I love him. That's my guy.
Yeah.
So, like, when he went to MLS, like, when he left United, and then he went to Everton, and then he went to MLS, and then he retired. I'm like, that one hit me, because that's, like, all-time number one guy on, like, my Mount Rushmore is Wayne Rooney. But I'm like, okay, well, that's still, like, when I was just getting into the game, like, Wayne Rooney was the guy, like, who I had, like, first Manchester United experiences with. So, like, that's a little bit different. But then when you've been in it for a while,
yeah,
and then a guy like Rafael Varane comes along, and you're like, oh, man, this kid's going to be unbelievable. Like, he's going to be great. He's young when he bursts onto the scene at Real Madrid. Like, he's going to be here for forever. When a guy like that happens, then you start to feel really old. Because even, like, I would put, like, the Toni Kroos and the Luka Modric kind of in that same, like, Wayne Rooney category.
Sure.
But when guys like Neymar call, like, when Neymar calls it quits, and, I mean, I know he's dealing with his own injuries and he's in Saudi Arabia, and we tend to, like, kind of forget about those guys right now. But, like,
oh, when, yeah. When Neymar calls it a career, we're going to be like, oh
man.
God.
Like, he was supposed to be the he was supposed to be the heir apparent to Messi and Ronaldo. Now he's done.
Right.
And he might call it a quits before both of those guys.
That's insane. Yeah.
You know, like, just that.
I
remember these players as teenagers, and now they're retiring. I don't know if I've ever felt older as a sports
dude. I saw a post the other day about Robbie Rogers, former Crew player, who may or may not remember, some of you, that he was the first openly gay pro sports North American pro sports athlete, you know, in MLS. He came out, was playing for LA Galaxy at the time. But, like, I remember when he burst on the scene with the Crew, and it was like, oh, this Robbie Rogers kid. And now it's like, what's he been up to lately? And they're talking about, like, his life and what he's been doing ever since. I mean, he retired from soccer
years ago,
probably close to 10 years ago now. And it's like, God, I'm old. Like, because I remember when he was an 18-year-old getting on the field, and, like, and then the story about him coming out, and that was great. It was a huge thing, and all that was awesome. But now it's like, man, he's not only been out of the game, he's been out for, like, a long time, enough that they're like, whatever happened to it? Like, what's he been doing since? Yeah. Not like, oh, this just happened last month and everybody's still... No, it's fresh in my mind, not so fresh in others.
Like, I saw a stat the other day that said, like, Marcus Rashford is one of this many players to score a goal in 10 straight Premier League seasons for Manchester United. I'm like, no, that's not true. He's still 23.
You feel like Luke Skywalker when he finds out the big twist. He's like, that's not true. That's impossible.
Yeah, I saw that set. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm old.
This is bad. This is really bad.
Yeah, indeed. Well, enjoy the soccer. Next week, TBD as to how we're going to do the podcast. It hopefully we'll be able to piece something together for you. But if not, just know we'll be back in a week and a half. Either way, that's why you hit subscribe. You'll always get the podcast whenever it comes out, right in your podcast player, whatever you use. Till then, thanks for listening and enjoy all the soccer.